I moved to Morocco and I waited about a year before I told my family.
Yeah, just
I
to
just
support
love
people.
celebrating literally everything. Maybe that's just me. I like big, bold, crazy things. They say, oh, you know, she converted because of her husband. I'm
Yeah, that's
like,
what I thought when I met you guys for the first time.
I'm not responsible for you. I'm only responsible for myself. So that's kind of where I stand with that. Why do they set you up for success? In America, they set you up for failure.
So, just to give our viewers a bit of a context, you were born and raised in the US, and you were working in a production in Hollywood,
Yes,
right?
yes.
And then at a certain point in your life, you decided to revert to Islam,
Yes,
right?
yes.
How did that happen? Like,
Well, there was someone that I worked with that was Muslim, and a lot of the times he would leave during work hours on Fridays and he would disappear. And I started asking him questions like, why are you always leaving? What are you doing? And he said, oh, I'm Muslim and we go to the mosque on Fridays, which that kind of piqued my interest. And at the time I was Christian. And so I said, well, why don't you just come to church with me? And he said, no, thank you. I'm not at all interested in that. And that kind of led to a conversation of, you know, I could talk to you about Christianity all day, but that's not what you're focused on. So let me see what you're focused on. Give me a copy of the Quran so that I can read it. And then I'm going to come back to you and tell you why this does not make sense. And that did not go the way that I thought it would, because I ended up in the process converting myself to Islam. So I knew that I had to leave Hollywood and I gave everything away and sold some things and packed one suitcase. And I bought a one-way ticket to Morocco so that I could learn about Islam, you know, from other Muslims, not just seeing what I saw on TV. I wanted to be really like submerged into a Muslim culture. And so that's kind of how it happened. I just bought a ticket and left, and now here we are.
and what was so appealing that you found in Islam at that time when you realized that it like clicks with you?
There were a lot of things that I believed in Christianity wholeheartedly, but there were a few things that really didn't make sense to me.
Like what?
Jesus being God. I never really believed that he was God. I kind of always had this belief personally that he was a prophet and not necessarily God, because there were so many things in the Bible that would contradict the concept of him being God. So I would say I was about 95% on board with Christianity, but there was that 5% that I was like, eh, I have some questions here. And so when I started reading the Quran, I was very surprised to see that all of the prophets that I knew from the Bible were also in the Quran. And it did shock me a little bit because I didn't know anything about it. And so I kind of kept reading, and as it progressed, I was like, oh, wait a second. This is starting to make a lot more sense than I anticipated it would. And from there, it just became more and more clear with each chapter, like, okay, this is it. This is the truth that you've been searching for. That 95% has now just hit 100 in this book. So I kind of knew from there, like, okay, there's no turning back. And I was very anti-Muslim for a long time. And, you know, living in the States, we are fed all of this propaganda in the media, and we know why. And, you know, they just want to scare us into thinking that Muslims are these like crazed maniacs that are trying to, you know, convert the world and kill everyone who doesn't want to submit. And it's so far from the reality of Islam. So going from, you know, kind of like warning my friends, all oh, these guys, they're after 9/11 happened, they're trying to get us and all these things like that, too, being the one that's now making her footsteps towards the mosque has definitely been a huge change.
And nowadays, what do you think people misinterpret about Islam?
Oh my gosh, the whole thing. I mean,
Like
most
what?
of it, that women are oppressed, that we are just these subservient, second-class citizens when it's not at all that way. So I think anyone that comes to Dubai can see there are so many women in positions of power in the workplace, in creative positions. You know, one thing I love about the Emirati women are they're just very innovative and they're very forward thinking, and they're all friendly and nice, and you know, they have really interesting careers and positions in even in government and things like that. And you see things here that you don't even see in the United States, you know? And I mean, even something so simple as the right to own property or the right to vote, you know, things that happened not that long ago in America, that has been happening for so many years in Islam. So I think the biggest misconception from my personal experience is people really not understanding that women are treated like queens. And so some of my friends, when they hear like, oh, you know, it's actually not like this, it's like this, then they're like, oh my goodness, that sounds amazing. And I'm like, hey, you're welcome to join, you know? So I think there's that, and that also that Muslims are on this, you know, worldwide quest for the ultimate takeover. And it's just not that way. You know, we're even taught in Islam, like, listen, don't go around force feeding your religion down someone else's throat. Like, if people want to convert and they want to talk to you about Islam, then they'll find their way to you. Don't be out there pushing for that, or, you know, trying to just be up in everyone's face and making other people change to believe what you believe in. We're very much taught, like, you do you, I'll do me, and we'll see what happens after. So it's a lot.
Yeah, my mind is still a little bit stuck on a queen treatment. Oh. Sorry, like, I just can't miss this topic. So what's the queen treatment? Maybe I need it.
Even just, you know, as a married woman, you know, we have a lot of rights over our husbands, which I think...
For example?
Well, first of all, we have the right to be taken care of. So it is my husband's obligation to me to provide shelter, food, clothing, to take care of all of those expenses. I'm not required to work, but I can if I want to. So it's not that we are, you know, being kept as slaves in the house and, you know, you're going to cook and clean and not ask questions. It's not that at all. We can work. We can have, you know, education. Matter of fact, the first university in the world was founded in Fez, Morocco, by a Muslim woman. So I think a lot of people that try to claim that, you know, Islam prevents education, no, it very much encourages it. So, you know, we were able to do, you know, whatever type of work that we want. For example, I'm an artist and my husband is also an artist. And, you know, we work together. He supports me. He tries to bring me in on projects. You know, he's very, very supportive in that sense. And that's also part of the ways that women are treated so nicely. You know, you are entitled to have someone who is kind to you and treats you with respect. And the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, said that the best of you are those who are best to their wives. So, you know, treat your lady with respect. And it's an obligation for the men to buy us little gifts and, you know, treat us like little princesses and things like that. And, you know, the men who follow Islam, they take that seriously because it's an obligation on them that they will be asked about, you know, by God. And, you know, I think that I don't want to get too personal, but it's very much not what people think. I can say that my husband treats me like an absolute queen and spoils me and takes care of me and everything. And I think that that's what the men are told to do. You know, she's precious. Treat her that way. You know, so it's not this second-class citizen mentality that I think a lot of people have in mind. It's quite the opposite. And I'm not saying for everyone. I'm sure there are some people that don't follow those rules and whatever, but that's not my personal experience. So, you know, it's just, it's a lot nicer and a lot kinder than I think people would believe.
How was it socially when you decided to convert?
Well, I moved to Morocco and I waited about a year before I told my family. Okay. Because I didn't want them to think that, you know, I went to this Muslim place and that, you know, somebody was holding me that hostage, forcing me to convert. You know, I wanted them to see that, like, especially my parents, like, I'm your same daughter. I'm your same silly, fun, you know, crazy person that you've always known. Now I just do things a little bit differently. I'm way more peaceful. I'm way more relaxed, you know. And so I didn't want anyone to think that, you know, I was influenced in any way. And I wanted enough time to pass for them to see, listen, you don't have anything to worry about. I'm not going to change and get crazy. I'm still a little crazy, but you know, I'm still the same Jamie that you've always known. Now I'm just a more polished version of myself. And so once I told my family, they were totally fine with it. My parents are very supportive.
Like straight away fine. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, yes. Great, thank you.
Yeah, my mom actually said to me, she said, look, you want to put your head on the ground 5 times a day? If that makes you happy, do it. That's fine. She's like, I'm not mad at all. The only thing I'm upset with you about is that you did such a major life change and you didn't tell me. You waited so long to tell me. But she's very open and she's very accepting. And alhamdulillah, she's just very, very supportive. Even during Ramadan, she'll bring over dates and, you know, she'll bring over all types of little food and she'll say, oh, you're about to break your fast. Don't eat anything. I'm going to bring you dinner, because she wants the reward to feed a fasting person, you know. And I'm like, Mom, you're so close. You're so close, you know. So she's been very, very supportive. My dad, too. And really all my friends, like, they know I'm still their same friend that they've always known. But there's just certain things that I don't do anymore. And, you know, I'm changed, but in a better way.
And, like, changed how?
My whole entire life. I mean, I don't know where to start with that one. I've reshifted my focus and my priority. And, you know, I'm married now, I have children, so naturally I'm going to be different than I was when I was younger and living in LA. But now I just, you know, I feel like I've rearranged the priorities in my life, that my whole life is centered around Islam, but in the best way. You know, it's not fanatical or anything like that. It's just a matter of having your focus shift from things that don't matter to, like, the most important thing. So it's been adjustments over the last 14 years, but very gradual and, you know, very easy shifts.
It's like just interesting what part here plays the religion and just growing up, you know, like, because when you grow up, everything shifts. And, like, yes. You change when you, like, have a husband, like, have a family. Yeah, but it's not, like, really related to religion. But, like, how much place, like, Islam plays here in takes?
I feel like it's so much of both at the same time. Because they happen simultaneously, mm-hmm. It's really hard to determine, like, what exactly, like, to put them in different categories. But, you know, Muslims live a very clean lifestyle, and I've just really repurposed my entire life towards, like, trying to be a good person and to just, I don't know, just be calm and friendly and kind and do good deeds and all those things. Not that I didn't do that before, but now it's just, it's a high priority. When you're young and you're in your early 20s, like, you know, you live a pretty selfish life because you don't have anyone to care about other than yourself. So that's normal at that time. So I think that, like you said, just that shift of growing up at the same time, both of them kind of just complement each other. And then, you know, over the last, like I said, 14 years, it's really kind of, like, smoothed me out a little bit, you know?
I have such a question. So what are the cultural traits or traditions or whatever you've been used to from the childhood, mm-hmm. that you had to give up when you mm-hmm. became Muslim? And do you miss any of those?
I think the most obvious are the holidays. You know, I grew up Christian, so we celebrated Christmas and Easter and Halloween and all of the holidays. So those are very big in American culture. You know, if you've ever been to the States during Christmas time, you'll see it and everywhere you go. So giving that up, which I think religiously that didn't bother me, but it's just, you know, you're so used to these traditions that you grew up with. And then, you know, with my mom, she wanted to continue those traditions with my kids, because as a grandma, that's, you know, you look forward to that for so long. And then for me to be like, yeah, so we're not going to really do Christmas, you know? So I think that's a little bit difficult on my parents to not have that. But my mom is very sweet and she finds other ways to celebrate, you know, Easter time, for example. They usually do an Easter basket and it's filled with candy and all these things. And so my mom very much respects my choice to be Muslim. And she, last year, she was like, listen, she made a big basket and it was candy and it was springtime, but it happened to coincide with Eid. So she's like, this is not an Easter basket. This is an Eidster basket. She, you know, so she's trying to, like, you know, find her way to still celebrate, but like in a way that's respectful to Islam. So even like Ramadan, for example, like she bought all these like window clings with like Ramadan Mubarak, and she'll buy like Ramadan decorations and things like that. So, you know, we can find a way to still enjoy those things from our culture, but now I've just kind of shifted it in a way that is more aligned with my beliefs.
But I have a lot of friends here in Dubai who are Muslim, mm-hmm. and they celebrate Christmas and they put up a Christmas tree, and I don't see any like contradiction there. Like, didn't you consider kind of mixing and just celebrating all the holidays? I'll give you an example, because like I'm not a very religious person, but well, I was baptized as Orthodox. My boyfriend, he's also not super religious, but he's Catholic because he's German. So for sure, now we have what's the situation of two Christmases, because there is Catholic Christmas, there is Orthodox Christmas there, yes. like on different dates. We ended up celebrating everything. Two Christmases, two Easters, and also we live here, like Ramadan, yeah, we go for iftar, even though we don't fast. Like, we just kind of decided to like celebrate everything. Mm-hmm. Don't you want to do that?
I personally don't, but I don't see, like, listen, if that's what works for you two and you enjoy that, and then also just being in a Muslim country and enjoying the peaceful energy that comes with Ramadan. I'm sure you feel it as a non-Muslim that the month feels different, you know, it always feels, in a sense, just more, I don't know, at ease and relaxed and a little bit slower. So for you to come and enjoy those iftars and kind of like take a look around you and see what's going on with everyone, I think that's great for you to, you know, kind of absorb everything around you. Me personally, I don't celebrate Christmas, and, you know, I'm not here to judge anybody who does. That's, you know, even in the Quran, it says like, I'm not responsible for you. I'm only responsible for myself. So that's kind of where I stand with that. But I choose to only stick with the Muslim holidays, you know, and at the same time, respecting everybody in their own celebrations, you know.
And I think it's like a very Dubai situation, because like there are so many cultures here, mm-hmm. and like,
Diwali, I forgot Diwali
also. Yeah, of course, because like everybody's just trying to blend in and just to try to understand better other people and like from different cultures. So yeah, that's probably why, you know, like you're like mixing it and trying different holidays. Yeah, just
to support people. I just love celebrating literally everything. Maybe that's just me.
Yes, and it's nice to learn about what other people are doing. It's nice to have that knowledge. Like, and then you can choose to celebrate that or not celebrate that, or, you know, whatever. But I feel like at least having the education about what other people are doing, and then it helps you understand people. Like, you know, maybe even in America, for example, people say to me, oh, you fast for 30 days, don't you die? I'm like, well, no,
we make
it through every year. And they, you know, it's a lot of the questions are like, what, not even water? I'm like, no, not even water, no gum, no can, nothing, you know. And so then when they see next year, oh, you're fasting, they kind of know, like, oh man, like that's a hard 30 days for you, you know, like they do their intermittent fasting for their workouts and things like that. But when you see a Muslim and they're tired or they're not feeling, you know, as chatty as they normally do, you know, you kind of have that understanding, like, oh, you know what, she's probably been up all night. The Tarawih prayers are late in, you know, they're late this time of night, and they stay up late and they wake up early and all these things. So it helps to kind of have that, you know, extra layer of compassion when you know somebody is doing the 30-day fast and things like that. And, you know, also just to bring that culture together, because I feel like in Dubai, it's like a cultural salad, right? You know, you have all these pieces, like, let's mix it up and make it
nice, you know.
Yeah, that's a nice salad.
Yeah, it's a very nice salad.
That's true. And I mean, being curious about other people, that's probably what our podcast is based on. So yeah. And I mean, in the first place, you were curious about Islam, and that's how you actually ended up being a Muslim, you know. So yeah. That's a pretty cool thing. What I wanted to ask, there is an interview on on the first, like, how you got to Islam, but there is not much about this 14 years. So when you converted, what was like the hardest thing for you? Like in the first, like, you know, first year, like first time, if anything.
I guess just learning the way to do things differently. You know, there's, like, for example, like, there's just certain things that Muslims do and don't do, and just kind of like taking in all of these tiny bits of information and then putting them in like a mental file cabinet of like, okay, if you want to do this, do this, if you want to do this, do this. And there's, you know, there's different prayers that we say throughout the day, like the ones in the mosque, but there's also little things that we say, like, for example, you know, there's things to say before we come in the house, when we leave the house, before we enter a bathroom, when we leave the bathroom, before we go to the mosque, before we eat, drink, sit, do anything. There's so many things. So it was really just kind of like having an empty box of Islamic knowledge and then just adding to that over the last years until now, you know. So I guess kind of like learning everything from scratch, because, you know, obviously if you're a born Muslim, you're doing these things, you're seeing your moms and your aunties and your family and everybody doing everything. So it's normal for you. But I'm coming with no cultural background of Islam and just, you know, trying to memorize things and then also sort them in order of importance. There are some things that are not that serious and there are some things that are very serious. So trying to decipher between what has a heavier weight and what I should focus on and, you know, the little details that kind of come later and fill in the blanks and things like that. But I would say, generally speaking, it's a very easy transition for me. I'm thankful for that. But that's why I wanted to do this in a Muslim country where I was free to, you know, be at a cafe and it's time to pray. I'm in the middle of the mountains. It's time to pray. I can say, hey, do you have a prayer rug? And then I can go in their back area where the employees pray and pray because it's time. And that's not weird. You do that in America, you get arrested. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, not really, but that's, you're able to practice. There are not many people to
ask, for information, or ask for advice. Yeah, so yeah, yes, of course.
Yes, and, you know, everybody along the way, when they hear that you have converted to Islam, they're usually very excited. And they're like, oh. They you know, they want to hear everything and they want to know your life story in 5 minutes and everything like that. But then they also, along the way, will teach you things. So you're kind of like picking up bits and pieces from everybody that you meet and kind of compiling that and filtering out the cultural influences and just sticking with just Islam, which I think a lot of people have said that reverts like myself, we don't have that, the cultural influence that says, you know, that changes the way people do things. Like, we just have like pure Islam and like no influence from our society where we came from. So they say it's a blessing because it's just unadulterated, pure, you know, from the book. So it's been a long journey, but a nice one.
When you left US, you left your career path as far as I understand, right? Mm-hmm. You were working in production in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
So how did like your becoming an artist happen?
Well, I was always practicing as an artist, but not full-time as a career. I would do the, you know, certain commissions or just things on the side. Working in LA, my schedule was a little bit crazy because, you know, sometimes you're on a production set till 3-4 in the morning and then you have to be back again at 6 a.m. So I didn't really have a lot of the time that I wanted to. I still did it, and then I was doing things a little bit afterwards as well. But then I really decided, like, I don't want to be in that world anymore. You know, I was doing even like music video production. I don't want to be on the set of a rap video anymore. You know, back then it was cool, but now to me it's not anymore. So I really was thinking about it, and my husband was like, what are you doing? You're sitting on all this talent. Like, why don't you just yalla, bismillah, start working, you know? And so I did a mural with him in Canada. And from there, he just kind of showed me the ropes and he started teaching me his tips and his tricks. And he's like, you can do this. Why are you, you know, let's see what you can do. So then he actually arranged for me to have my first mural that I did, and I just freestyled it, and it was really fun. And I said, canvas is one thing, but the murals are something else. I really enjoy this. And so ever since then, he's just been kind of encouraging me to pursue that. And we have very, very different art styles. So I think it's fun for him to kind of see that mine is so far off from his. So it's nice, like, I'm over here on this side, he's over here on this side, but it works. And, you know, it just kind of took off from there and then catapulted.
As a person who used to work like on set in production, when you mm-hmm. entered this room, did you want to fix anything? Because it's like also professional.
No, I trust that everyone here knows what they're doing, because I did say Dubai is filled with creatives and everybody that's, you know, innovative and things like that. But sometimes even back home, sometimes if I'm in a place where they're shooting something, I'm always looking like, oh, you know, kind of checking it over, or like seeing mistakes sometimes in like a film, you know, you can see like a cable and I'm like, ah, oh, look at that, you know. But generally speaking, I just have kind of retired from that whole side of my life. And now I'm more worried about a paintbrush than I am about a camera. So it's a balance.
Now just looking at the murals, I'm like, okay, this is a nice one.
Yes. Yes. There's a lot of mural artists that I follow on Instagram, and I love seeing other people's work. And I love my husband's work. His is just mind-blowingly cool to me, because it's so different from what I do. So I can see his work and I just respect his talent. And every time he does something, I'm just like, oh, how do you do this? It's so cool, you know? But then when I pick out colors, and then he looks at me, he's like, how did you pick those colors? Like, that, those don't go together. It doesn't even make sense, but it makes total sense. So it's nice, because, you know, as artists, I think our eyes are always scanning everything, and we're always kind of keeping our eye out for something that's intriguing. And, you know, I'm always taking pictures of things that are inspiring, you know.
By the way, when did you meet your husband? Like, after the conversion? Was it like long after, or?
It was about 8 years after I converted.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So a lot of people, they see somebody like me that's clearly, you know, a revert, and they say, oh, you know, she converted because of her husband.
I'm, yeah, like, that's what I thought when I met you guys for the first time, mm-hmm. to be honest.
And I'm always like, no, that was a long time before that, you know. And they say, well, how did you find Islam? I was like, I chased it. I moved from Beverly Hills to a literal, like, hut almost in Morocco, and I lived there by myself, and I painted two murals in there while I was there. And you know, I just really wanted to, like, immerse myself in that. And so having that background made it easy for me when I married my husband, because I kind of knew, you know, the different things, the cultural things. And he teases me all the time. He's like, you know, I think you were born in the wrong place by accident, because he's like, you're so Arab in your heart, but, you know, on the outside you don't look it, but on the inside, you know, I relate to so many things in this culture that it just, I feel like being in the Middle East has always felt like home to me, which doesn't make any sense, but to me it makes total sense.
So how did you meet?
We actually met through some Instagram posts, and I saw his work and I was like blown away. I thought his art was so amazing. And my mom does calligraphy. So I tagged my mom in one of his posts and I was like, Mom, you got to see this artist. He's amazing. And then we started working from there. And I, at the time, I was looking for some remote work because I didn't want to be in that Hollywood scene anymore. And he needed a manager at the time. So I was like, well, I can do this, you know. If I can handle Hollywood, I can handle this. Like, let's make it happen. So we actually agreed on a contract, and then we met in person, and then the rest is history.
Super yeah. nice. I mean, that's like a digitally arranged marriage.
Yeah. it's an interesting story. But yeah, alhamdulillah, because now I've found, you know, my match. And he's, like I said, he's an artist too. I'm an artist. We have everything in common that kind of helps us. And the glue that really holds us together is Islam. So I think, you know, when you have this guidebook.
The pieces of the puzzle, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And the Quran is like a guidebook for life. So anything that we ever experience, we just turn to that. And any advice we might need is always in the book. So, you know, it's nice when you're on the same page as someone, like spiritually especially, you know. And so here we are. Yeah.
And mural art, because, I mean, I've never experienced it like in my life because mm-hmm. I don't understand like, okay, canvas. But like, how did you end up being a mural artist? Why?
I like big, bold, crazy things. And
we can see that.
Yes. I just really enjoyed taking work that, you know, you can paint on a canvas and you can showcase your work in a gallery. Okay. But not everyone has access to that gallery.
Mm-hmm.
And even when I was doing like murals in the States, you know, sometimes if somebody is from, you know, a home that doesn't prioritize museums or galleries, or they don't have the financial ability to, you know, have a mom go pay for her and her five kids to go check out artwork at the art museum. That's not realistic for a lot of people. But those same people are out in public. So if I can do my murals and have it be displayed for anyone and everyone, and it's free, I like that, because then maybe somebody could be inspired by that. And sometimes, you know, you might have some children that see artwork that are really inspired, like, oh, this is so cool. Like, I want to do that. And then maybe they start sketching, and then who knows, maybe they might get into an art field, and maybe that might take them out of their situation, especially when you have, like I said, for example, like low income families that, you know, the parents are just trying to get food on the table. They're not worried about a membership pass to an art gallery or an art museum, you know? So sometimes those kids, they might not have access to, you know, university or things that are just so out of reach for them, but they can polish a talent, and that talent can get them up and out of their situation. So if I can be an inspiration to anyone and you know, results in something like that, to me, that's the ultimate success, because, you know, I feel like you can do anything, truly. And I know it sounds cliche, but you really can do anything. So if something I do inspires someone else to want to be creative enough to change their own situation, then that can be done through public art. So that's why I love having my work available for everyone, not just people that are necessarily like in the art world, you know?
Yeah, and you said that murals and public art are important because more people have access mm-hmm. to that. But why do people need to see art at all?
Because life is depressing without art, you know? I feel like you can have a really bad day, and you could be walking and you turn the corner and you see something bright and beautiful and colorful, and it changes your mood, you know? And I feel like without art, everything is just gloomy, you know? And like I said, I'm a very colorful artist. So for me, I love when I see something unexpected and just bold and wild and out there. So I know how it makes me feel. And so I want to also be able to contribute to that.
Was there any art piece, not necessarily mural, mm-hmm. like any art piece that you've seen and that influenced you like a lot, and you realized like, okay, from this art piece, my life is something else?
Not a specific piece, but there are two girls that are mural artists and they work as a team, and I love, love, love their work. Their names are Jesse and Katie, and that's their mural team name, Jesse and Katie. And I really was inspired by their work. It's very geometric and colorful and crazy. And they have a way of using shapes and colors to create beautiful artworks without, you know, without using words or people or animals or anything like that. It's just very cool. So I think those two inspired me a lot when I was first like researching. And I love anything that's colorful.
And when you reverted to a Muslim, like, mm-hmm. did it influence your art as well? Because for sure we know that in Islam, like, a lot of things are can't be actually, like, the, drawn or...
Yeah, the only thing that I don't do is I don't draw animals or people. Anything that has a soul, I don't do.
So, but did you do this before?
I actually did... I didn't paint people that often, but I did do some commissioned work for Kanye West, and I did another one for Pharrell and for Common. So those were, like, special jobs, but typically I didn't paint, like, people and animals regularly, which is a bummer because I really like pink flamingos, and if I could include them in my work, I would, but I don't. So I just use shapes to tell a story, and in my work, all of the shapes, they symbolize something. Like, it's never just, like, random geometrics. It's always telling a story.
In your, like, in the mural art, what would be, like, your, I don't know, dream work, dream piece of art?
That's a really good question. I would love to do something in an airport.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And also, I'm really interested. I really want to do a basketball court.
Ooh, nice.
Yes.
Do you like basketball?
I love basketball. Love it. I've loved it since I was little. I am a huge NBA fan. I would love to design a court or do something special. You know, I know there's a lot of NBA in Abu Dhabi. So if anybody is listening, I'm available for hire.
So yeah, guys, if you're watching this, please. Yes. You know, yes. who to commission to do the job.
Yes, any airlines, I am fully available for hire for any type of anything.
Yeah, so yes. If any airlines are watching us,
yes, please. Or anyone. Yes, that's Jaime, not Jamie on Instagram, if anybody wants to find me.
By the way.
Yeah, that was my question when we were discussing with Nastya. Because, like, when I was watching your interview on YouTube, mm-hmm. It was like, Jamie. So, like, your name is Jamie.
Yes.
But then, like, on the Instagram, I saw, like, this Jamie, not Jamie.
Yes.
So how does it, like...
What does that mean?
Who are
you? Okay. Yeah. What's there?
Jamie is a very common name in the States. And almost everyone spells it Jamie.
Yeah.
Okay. But I don't spell it that way. I spell it Jaime, which phonetically makes more sense. But so my name is Jaime, not Jamie.
Like, officially, like in the passport word.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. So since everyone always spells it wrong, it's me clarifying how to spell my name.
Okay, understood.
So it's Jaime, not Jamie.
I can totally relate to that, but yes. My name is like this long. And I, like, it's Anastasia, like, and this is even like an internationalized version. And sometimes when I book a restaurant here, they're like, can you please spell it for me? I'm like, wow, okay, that's going to take a while. And then if they also want to spell my surname, which is also like this. Yeah, that's, I can understand that.
Yes, and I'm sure if you have like one letter that's different, you know.
Then it's a different name.
Yes.
So I...
Because I thought there was like a philosophical, you know, like idea in the Instagram name.
No.
Like there was a Jamie before and there's like the new Jamie.
Nope. It's just me letting everybody know. Because funny enough, my email address is quite quirky. And there's another girl that has the same exact quirky email address as me, but she spells it Jamie.
Oof, yeah, then.
Yes. And so we actually met because I was getting emails that were clearly not for me. And I was like, is there another one like me? And so I ended up emailing this account, which I assumed was who they were trying to reach. And I said, listen, my name is Jamie Brown, Jaime. And I feel like your name is Jamie Brown, Jamie. And I'm like, I got this. I don't know if this is for you. Turns out, we both were living in America. We both were living in California. We both were living in LA and we both worked production. So she's actually a costume designer. And so I would get like call times for productions that I was not a part of. I'm like, what, 5 a.m.? No, I'm not even on this job. What is this? And so then we started to figure out that people were sending us each other's emails. So over the last, oh my goodness, 15 years, we constantly like send each other the emails that are clearly not intended for us. which has been fine. But there's been some, you know, emails that we get and I'm like, oh, okay, this looks really urgent. So we send it right away and things like that. So now we've become friends over the years because always the mail interception. So that's why it's very clearly J-A-I-M-E, not J-A-M-A. And I wish it was more magical than that, but that's really it.
Well, I mean, no, the simple explanation is always better.
Yes.
My question. I have a lot of friends who are entrepreneurs, and I very often hear this topic coming up more and more now that people are living in a very fast-paced world. We're like so focused on our work. We're always like on our phone and our emails, and that very often people are actually kind of losing like the meaning of all of that. And this, and then they have a burnout or something, like classic story. And then they try to find their way back to values, meaning, spirituality, whatever you name it. And many people actually turn to religion, which they were forgetting over the years. So, and that's also very much your story. Like maybe your motivation was different, but the question is the following. Do you have any advice for people who are searching for meaning now? Like where to find it?
I would say I agree with that. I think a lot of people are feeling very disconnected, and without getting into a way bigger topic on that, you know, the technology has really disconnected us, even the way that we live. And, you know, especially like in high-rise buildings, for example, which you find a lot here, you know, you might have a building that has 35 floors and everyone that lives in that building all shares the same address, but nobody knows each other. How do you know your neighbors? You don't, you know. But then we take this technologically advanced lifestyle where everything is just on our phones, at our fingertips and this and that, but we're losing the human connection. And I think that that has a lot to do with it as well. I think there's a lot of people that are feeling lonely and they feel depressed because they're just living this rat race lifestyle. And so oftentimes when people get to that point, that's where they turn to what is constant. And I feel like my personal belief, that's God. You know, he's, as Muslims, we believe that no matter what, he's always there waiting for us to return to him. Like a friend who's waiting by the phone, waiting for your call. When you call, he answers always, every single time. So I think inherently people know that there's something more to life than just working these jobs and, you know, living this lifestyle and doing all that. So for a lot of people to kind of reconnect in a way that feels like home, because that is home, you know. So I would say if you're searching for something, if you were raised in a certain religion and you're exploring another one, or maybe you're living here and you have Muslim friends and you see the way they interact and you see the way they treat each other and the way they treat strangers and all these things, I would say just pray and ask for guidance. Just say, you know, lead me to what is the truth. And if you're genuinely searching for the truth, and if you're genuinely searching for, you know, something to fill that void, I believe, because of my own personal experience, it will come to you very easily. Because, you know, as Muslims, we believe that if we come to God at a walking pace, he'll come to us in a running pace. So if you're searching for that something to fill that emptiness, then God is always there. So I would say just pray and say, like, if whatever the truth is, lead me the right path to the truth, because I'm genuinely searching. And what I'm feeling here, down here on earth, is not fulfilling to me at all. Show me something that fulfills me, and like lead me in the way that you want me to be led. And then from there, you just trust, you know, and things will happen for you in ways that you could never imagine. That's based on personal experience.
How does your Western upbringing influence your life? Like,
it's a battle. It's a constant battle between things that, you know, were normal to me back then, that I try not to let influence me now. And For example, I used to really love hip hop, and I used to, like, from a very young age, this is, you know, the old school style of hip hop and rappers and everything like that. Like pushing that to the side and trying not, you know, it's like because of the lyrics are not always the best, and there's cursing, and they're talking about things that I don't like align with anymore. So it's like, you know, things like that that try to creep their way back in. And then it's like, okay, just relax a little bit. You don't need to be listening to all that, you know. So things like that. I think that my specific upbringing, you know, I come from a place that's very friendly and very outgoing. And just very, I don't know, warm and welcoming. So I think there are certain things that I take from Western culture that I have found a way to kind of smooth out and work its way into Islam in the best way. So, you know, just being kind to others, looking out for your neighbor, doing good deeds. You know, if you have a neighbor that you know is even like now fasting, if your neighbor is fasting, bring your neighbor a plate of food, or better yet, invite your neighbor into your house and say, come eat with us, don't eat by yourself. You know, things like that. You always want to be your best version that you can be. So I take the values that I've learned from my hometown and my upbringing, and I try to really like extract all those good qualities and then apply it to my life now in a way that makes sense. So you know, you kind of do away with the old habits that don't really make sense in your life anymore, to, you know, taking the good things and really magnifying them.
Okay. And what would you, I don't like think like not suggest, but what would you like the Western culture to have to adapt from like what you learned from Islam?
Oh my gosh, there's so many things. The sense of community. America especially is a very hyper individualistic society. And I think in Islam, it's very much community based. It's first of all, it starts within the home. You know, the way that Muslims do things and they interact with themselves and their neighbors, and the way they go out into the city and they're interacting there as well. It's just a sense of community that's different. People look out for each other. And I'm not saying that this does not happen in America, so I don't want anybody to get my words wrong. But, you know, the society is different. You know, it really follows like it takes a village mentality. Here, it's totally normal if, you know, a guy walks by my kids and pats one of them on the head and is like, oh, assalamu alaikum, you know. In America, if somebody touches your kid, you're calling the police, you know. So it's just a different mindset. It's a different set of community. It's very much like taking care of people and like genuinely looking out for people and like doing things out of kindness and expecting nothing in return, not even a thank you. I don't do things. I'm not going to do a good deed or a nice gesture because I want recognition for that. I'm not going to do it because I want you to say thank you. I'm not going to do that so that, you know, 2 years from now I can be like, do you remember that time I picked you up from the airport? You owe me. Like, we're not doing that. We do things to be nice. And again, I'm not saying that where I'm from doesn't do that. It does happen. But I feel like the sense of community here is a lot different. And I think anybody, especially like it's almost impossible to be lonely if you're a Muslim, because just go to the mosque. Everybody's there, you know, and everybody will welcome you and take you in. And one of the things that I noticed when I lived in Morocco, they have a saying that if you're in Morocco, you can never go hungry. And I strongly believe that, because, you know, you could knock on 100 doors and say, hey, listen, I'm traveling. I'm really hungry. I lost my wallet. I don't have any money. I'm just a mess. Like, can you help me at all? 98 out of 100 houses would be like, absolutely, come in. Here's a towel. Go take a shower. I'll make you some lunch. Have a nap. Here's some blankets. Stay as long as you want. Like, that's genuinely how you would be welcomed. Where if you do that in America, good luck. They'll slam the door in your face and be like, who are you? Get off my property, you know? And it's just, it's a disconnected society. Versus here, you feel the warmth in the community and you feel that, you know, sometimes the kindness from strangers is overwhelmingly just warm. And, you know, I'm not used to that kind of interaction. And again, I come from a very friendly place. I don't want anybody to think that I'm saying it, you know, Americans are not like this. No, there are. There definitely are. But here it's the normal. It's the standard, you know? So I think just like embracing this sense of like everyone helping each other, everyone being a community, everybody looking out for each other and like taking care of everyone. I think that that's really missing from where I'm from.
And like the other way around, what's missing, let's say here in the UAE, that you have in America and you think that's really great there about culture?
Nothing. Truly. Everything that you would want is here. And, you know, I think the stereotype is that, you know, like I said, going back to the women issue of like, you know, we're not allowed to work, we're not allowed to get an education, we just have to stay at home and cook and clean and do all these. No, that's not happening. It's not. I mean, sure, maybe somebody wants that and maybe that's their life by choice. That's great. But I would say here, you have everything. You have women who are really extremely creative, doing wonderful things, being, you know, video directors, heads of the creative departments, and, you know, all these things. So you're taking like the best of both worlds here. You're extracting all of the good things of, you know, having access to amazing education in the States. But here the difference is, you know, here they set you up for success. In America, they set you up for failure. And I think that's something that a lot of Americans don't want to acknowledge. Because what happens here? Okay, you want to go to university? Okay, your university is paid for. Oh, your university is out of the country. It's somewhere else. It doesn't matter. We'll still pay for it. Okay? Versus America, oh, no, you have to go. We're sold this lie of, oh, if you go to university and you get a degree, you're going to have a wonderful job afterwards. No, you're not. You're going to be in debt. You're going to be slave to your loan that you took out. And you're going to be forced to work a job that you don't want to work at because you have to pay back those loans. And if you don't, your house could get foreclosed. You know, so it's like, it's all these things that, you know, they want you to fail in America. They want you to be so reliant upon student loans and being in debt and not having your own freedom to do something else. Versus here, no, they take care of the citizens. They take care of their people. They want you to succeed. They set up programming. They have all these opportunities for you to grow and share your talents and be a productive and contributing member of society. So I feel like here there's really nothing.
But what about American dream, or is it only for expats in America?
It's an American nightmare. You know, you can do anything you want to do, but everything comes with a price. There's always a catch. And that's the thing. I think a lot of people watch TV or movies and they see this dream life and they're like, oh, that would be me someday. And it's not, because you're sold this idea that it's just this wonderful place. And I don't want to sound like someone who's talking bad about my own country. That's not my intention at all. I just know from living there and knowing the reality of how things are. I've seen my friends struggle that, you know, they lose their job, they miss, you know, 1 month or 2 months payment on their home. The bank has taken their home and now they're homeless. But yet they still owe the money on the rest of the house that they don't even get to live in because the bank has taken over and foreclosed on it. I mean, it's just there's no room for error. You know, one wrong move and you can end up homeless. You know, one medical treatment, one death in the family, one loss of a job. Next thing you know, you're on your streets and you're homeless for 8-10 years. Like, what? This is the American dream? You know, and again, I'm not saying that it's an awful place. I'm not saying that. I really don't want people to take my words and say, oh, you know, you hate your country. No, that's not it at all. I'm just saying I've seen how things work here. I've seen how things work there. One place it works great. One place it doesn't work at all. And that's just a very neutral viewpoint. And I think that, you know, a lot of people get a real slap in the face when they move there and they see that it's not at all what they expected it to be. Because, again, Hollywood is all selling you a dream. Oof. I know. I don't want that to sound harsh. I don't want people to be in the comments like, oh, she hates America. No, that's not it at all. I'm just saying, like, go live there and you'll see. ask someone that's grown up there and they'll tell you, yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. Like the way things work there are not in our favor. You know, I mean, look at healthcare. If you don't have insurance and you need to have a baby, it's like $45,000 just to have a baby.
But here, if you don't have insurance?
I don't know. I don't know about that. I know that the healthcare system in America is not ideal. You know, I know that things work differently here and you can get a lot of things here. You can get anything in Dubai. I mean, you live here, you know. Anything is
available. Yeah, well, you still need a health insurance.
Yes, but things are possible and they're not going to do things necessarily here that are purposely going to hurt you, you know.
Yeah, this is an interesting idea, like purposely hurt you or not. Like that you hear you're more up to success than there. That's a cool idea. I've never thought about that actually from this perspective.
Yeah. I feel like the government here really takes care of its people.
But I wonder, is it like, ain't it like a Western approach adapted by the government here about like building the success story and like they have money and they're pouring it like to support people?
That's exactly the point. They have money and they're using it to support people. In the States, they take your money away from you.
The thing here is that what I'm thinking of, I think that our viewers have this question. There are certain, especially when we're talking about the position of a woman,
mm-hmm.
There are certain countries where a lot of rights are taken from women.
Mm-hmm.
And how is that balanced? Like, why? If we're in the beginning, we talked about like this queen approach and everything, but there are certain countries where it's not like this.
Mm-hmm.
How does it work?
Well, I don't live in those other countries, so I don't know necessarily how it works. But I do know that it has nothing to do with Islam if they're taking the rights away from women. That's their society. That's the way those things work in those countries. But that's not reflective of Islam at all.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like here, it's different because women are urged to be successful in whatever way they choose. And whether that means holding a high position in a company or being the head of creativity in some other organization, or whether that means staying at home and taking care of a home, or whether that means not getting married and staying single, or whatever you want to do. Whatever you want to do is supported. And that's how it should be. You know, a woman's choice to work or not should be her choice. And I think other countries that are trying to take these rights away from women and say to them, oh, you can't get an education, you can't go work, you get, that's between them and their respective countries. And like I said, that has nothing to do with Islam.
Yeah, and that's why I ask this question, because I think that in general mind,
mm-hmm.
that's actually connected. And that's why there is a lot of criticism.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's a good thing, just totally. To settle it down.
Because they see like the extreme things.
Yeah.
And then they just associate that with everything Islam, which goes back to the beginning part when there was a gentleman that was on this podcast that was talking about how you can't look at someone here and then say that this is how it is everywhere. It's the same kind of concept, I think, where, yes, maybe in certain countries, maybe they're not doing things in the best way, but that doesn't mean that all countries do things like that, you know. And I think it's not fair to say, well, if it happens there, that's how it always is everywhere, because that's just not true.
Yeah, I think that's just important to be like,
mm-hmm.
to word it out.
yeah. And I think you're right. That's where a lot of the stereotypes come in and say, oh, look at how they treat their women. And, you know, they don't even let women drive. I'm like, okay, that's one country and they drive now, so who cares? You know, and it's like, and the people that want to say that, like from where I'm from, it's like, okay, but the women in the States don't even have control of their own bodies. So who cares if somebody can drive or not? So what? Take a taxi. You know what I mean? You don't have control of your own body and you're worried about what's going on over in the Middle East. Focus on yourself and your own country and your own shortcomings. And once that's all perfect, then you can start criticizing other places. But I feel like the imbalance is so far off there between the two places that I think it's kind of like, well, either make some changes or don't, but look at what's in front of you first. you know. Cool. I mean, I feel like that's fair.
True, of course.
Yeah, so well, there is one final question that we usually ask all our guests. And I don't know if it really applies to you, but we will maybe have to play around there a little bit. So what is one quality of an American person that is so great that you wish every person in the world has?
I think we're very open-minded. We're very accepting. And I feel like generally outgoing and friendly. And I think sometimes some people are taken a little bit back by that. You know, if I see some, if I'm in public and I see someone and she's wearing an amazing outfit and she has the cutest bag and her shoes are funky and she's just a whole vibe, I will absolutely walk up to her and be like, okay, we see you purple shoes, you know? And so like, we'll be very open with our friendliness. And I think sometimes people are like, wait a minute, are you complimenting me? And I'm like, yeah, you look amazing. Why not? You know? So I think that sometimes, you know, we're very friendly, and sometimes I forget that not everybody is as outgoing as we are, but you know, I'm not going to change that about myself. If I see somebody and I want to compliment them, I'm going to compliment them. There's no harm done in that, you know? So I think we're just generally friendly and really open to anybody. Like you could walk down the street wearing anything you want. You could have blue hair. Nobody cares. No one cares. Nobody's going to judge. It's kind of like everybody do what you want and we're okay with everything.
We as Russians have a stereotype about Americans that when you do this, you are not doing it for real, that you don't mean it. Is it true?
No. I even tell my kids, I'm like, you don't give compliments unless it's real, because you don't want to give a fake compliment. I was in a store yesterday and there was this girl, I don't know where she was from, but she had the most beautiful skin and she was wearing this like lavender purple outfit. And I was shopping and I looked and I did a double take and I was like, oh my God, I have to say something. And I walked up to her and I was like, I'm sorry, but you need to know this. And she was like, what? And I was like, you look so good in this color purple that you have to wear this more often. I'm like, unbelievably beautiful in this color purple. And she was like, oh my gosh. Oh, and she got all shy and she was like, stop it, you're making me blush. And she's like, is that what you wanted to say? I was like, yes. This purple is fantastic on you. I'm like, you are shining. And I meant it. I really meant it. She was just gorgeous, absolutely stunning. And mashallah. And I'm going to say something, but I'm not going to take the time out of my day to stop shopping, to walk all the way over to the corner where she is to go say a fake compliment. You know, I'll make the effort if it's genuine, but I'm not taking 20 steps out of my way to tell you a fake thing, you know? So if we say it, I mean, I can't speak for everybody, but I know me personally. If I'm saying a compliment, it's the real deal, because I don't have a lot to give out. I can't just be handing them out for free, you know? They have to be valuable and worth it. So it's genuine.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you. That was an amazing conversation.
Thank you for having me on. It's been lovely talking to you. And, you know, hopefully I've been able to give an insight into two different sides.
Definitely.
Of it's two true. Different cultures.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.